Media recognition from Bloomberg, Reuters, Recycling Trade Publications. Patented process for 100% recovery of critical metals, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, aluminum. American Manganese is focused on recycling lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles. American Manganese trades on the TSX Venture, AMY, the U.S., AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit AmericanManganeseInc.com or phone me, Larry Ray, at 778-574-4444.
Welcome to the Goddard Report. Comments made on the Goddard Report and TalkDigitalNetwork.com are an expression of opinion only. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Tanya Gaw. She's the founder of Action for Canada, online at actionforcanada.com. That's action, the number four, Canada.com. She's speaking to us from Vancouver. Tanya, welcome back to the Goddard Report.
Thank you so much, Jim. Good to be here.
Tanya, the headline reads, Action for Canada is taking back the country by storm. Can you tell us about the successes you're having at Action for Canada?
Well, it has really been quite exciting in this last while. It's not that all of it we could say was good news. Even good news is, or bad news is good news in this instance. And one of the reasons I say that is in Alberta, we have had chapters since, I would say, August. We maybe had about 10 chapters that we've been trying to build up. And then we went on a huge campaign, and it was very specific and targeted to have chapters across Canada. And since August, we have 110 chapters and growing. Within those chapters, the people are getting reaching out to the larger community, and then we are taking the notices of liability and commencing action against elected officials, against employees are doing it against employers, etc. So in Alberta, it must be effective, because somebody sent me a link last week to a company I'd never heard of before called RMA Insurance. And RMA Insurance had written this letter that was, it says at the top on December 10th, it goes, RMA Insurance, Bulletin, Urgent, Action for Canada Awareness. And within this letter, they provide a great deal of misinformation. They make defamatory and libelous statements. They try to make it out that the good people that are working with Action for Canada might be dangerous and cause harm. So in other words, just accept these notices of liability. And if you feel threatened, call law enforcement. And I mean, anybody that knows anybody about Action for Canada knows we've been a very peaceful movement, but a real force to reckon with because of the effectiveness of the notices of liability. So I've sent the president of RMA Insurance a letter, and I've told him that he needs to cease and desist, Mr. Paul McLaughlin, and that they need to write a letter not comparing us to organizations like Freemen on the Land and Sovereign Citizens, who don't believe we have a law and a constitution, and it's just contrary to everything that Action for Canada is promoting, that we want people to understand they have 100% guaranteed rights under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms, under the Constitution and the rule of law. So it's been interesting what's going on there. And as I looked into research RMA Insurance, they were specifically talking about how municipalities had been receiving the notices of liability, and wouldn't you know, they're providing insurance for mayors and city councils. So if we move forward in the direction, our strategy is to next go for criminal charges, then that means RMA Insurance is probably going to be dishing out a lot of money to support and cover the costs of the legal costs for mayors and city councilors. So we can see why they would want to discredit us. So that's just one example. We had a huge, very successful campaign in BC that's been against the school trustees who were mandated to vote whether or not teachers should be vaccinated. And we've had 22 out of 60 school boards, so 22 out of 22 have voted against the mandate in response to the campaign saying that they could be held personally liable. Then we've had success in New Brunswick and as well as in Ontario, where a school board in Hamilton just had a vote on whether or not they were going to mandate vaccination for school staff, and they voted no as well. after our chapter leaders had gone out and delivered the notice of liability and as well followed up. So there's a lot of people have been knocking us saying the notices of liability don't work, but I would be asking them, then why are we having such a powerful impact? And for one last example is Premier Moe in Saskatchewan has been addressing Action for Canada and the notices of liability in the legislature. And that information comes directly from two MLAs who were present when this was taking place. So these are huge wins as far as I'm concerned. And we're just going to up this campaign when it comes to the new year.
So what's Action for Canada working on now?
Well, we're now that we've got all the notices of liability completed, so we've pretty much covered anything that anybody has a concern for. It started out with notices of liability to protect our children, non-consent forms for the masks, anything COVID. Then it went into a notice of liability for our children, and it was to make sure that educators, anybody that had contact with our children knew that they were unlawfully practicing medicine by prescribing, recommending, coercing, advertising, anything possible regarding these dangerous injections. Then I created it next for employees to serve employers, and then for the unions, and then for elected officials. We've got a notice of liability against all COVID testing. It's actually an indictable offense, 3 to 5 years in prison or $1 million fine. So all of this information is available on our notice of liability page. And then the most recent one that we launched, which I've been working on and wanting to get done for months, but it's hard to juggle the priorities, is against the media. And so we have people across Canada, anybody in the mainstream media that is going to write a report that is pro COVID narrative from the government without the balance of truth and information is going to be served a notice of liability. They have a journalistic standard that they've got to apply with, and what would you say, a moral and ethical duty to report unbiased, and they're just not doing that. And that's one of the greatest problems, because of course they've been the propaganda arm of the government since the onset of this whole fraud. And had everybody shut the TV off and the news, they would have never known that there was any emergency to even think about.
How powerful are the notices of liability, and do you have new ones?
Well, the most recent, I say, was the media notice of liability, and I believe that unless somebody lets me know where we could do, you know, another that's more strategic, I think we've covered them all. And so all of them, I guess even in relation to your last question, is that the movement going forward is to increase the awareness across Canada that people have 100% guaranteed rights, and there is nothing that the government can implement, no amendment to an order, no new order, nothing that would that could violate their individual rights. And so once people are empowered with the knowledge that even under an emergency, if the federal government had implemented it, which they have not in Canada, even if there were a federal emergency, the federal emergency preamble states very clearly that nothing, no order, can supersede your charter rights or Bill of Rights. And these are fundamental rights that are guaranteed to Canadians. And in addition to the notices of liability, I've created it's called additional vax mandate letter of response. And then there's a second one that's specific to employees, further letter of response. And I'm asking that when people are preparing to serve a notice of liability, that they would include this additional letter. I sort of termed it the drop the mic letter. And so the one specific for employees is that it would use threat to use a COVID-19 injection, mask, or testing as a condition of employment. And then parents were getting back to me for the kids who are post-secondary and saying, what about kids? Can we use this letter? Can you do another one, another version of this? And so I broadened it to hopefully cover every obstacle that anybody is facing. And the other one says threat to use a COVID-19 injection, mask, or testing as a condition of education, extracurricular activities, which could be sports, hockey, drop-in hockey, etc., employment, essential or non-essential services. And we have a lot of people, as an example, who are saying, look, it's two women actually, totally opposite ends of the country, and said, my husband has been rushed to emergency. We don't know if he's going to make it, and they won't let me see him because I'm not vaccinated. Well, a hospital is an essential service, and you need to be an advocate for your loved one in the hospital to, one, make sure they know they better not give them the jab. Otherwise, you're going to hold them personally liable. And we're not talking about the doctor as Dr. Paul Smith. We're talking about Paul Smith without any title. If you are committing an offense against another individual that's an indictable offense, then you have a right to press criminal charges against that person. And so moving forward, now that all the notices of liability are created, we've got this powerful additional letter that lays out all of your rights based on the Constitution and the Charter of Rights and the rule of law. Now we're moving towards individuals actually pressing criminal charges, laying criminal charges before the Crown. We're not bothering with the police. We are going right to the Crown and submitting and laying criminal charges. So we have numerous employees whose employers, nurses, for example, have been put on unpaid leave and told that they can't work unless they get double jabbed. Well, that's an indictable offense. That's extortion. And it's committing tort. It's extreme mental angst that they're putting on another person. You either get an experimental injection or you don't have a job. You lose your house because you can't pay for your mortgage or pay your rent, and you can't feed your kids. So it's in this letter that I've called the drop the mic. At the end of it, it says to the individual, to your boss, Dr. Paul Smith, extortion, committing tort, privacy violations, willful misconduct, assault and battery, which would is within the limits and boundaries here by trying to tell somebody they've got to take an experimental injection that we know and we have evidence of is causing extreme harm and even death. So it goes extortion, committing tort, privacy violations, willful misconduct, assault and battery, and acting in bad faith are serious indictable criminal code offenses. Interfering with someone's right to an education, employment, extracurricular activities, or essential or non-essential services is a further violation of the Constitution and Charter of Rights and Freedoms. I am writing to advise you that if you persist in interfering with my guaranteed rights by supporting or enforcing the COVID-19 injection, testing, mask, or any other medical treatment under threat of losing my right to an education, employment, extracurricular activities, or essential or non-essential services, that I will hold you personally liable for any loss of income, including potential future income, damages, and or any injury I suffer as a result of your actions. You are personally not protected under any act, order, or statute that is in violation of the Canadian rule of law, Constitution, Charter Rights and Freedoms. It is the duty of every Canadian citizen to uphold the law and respect the Constitution and Charter of Rights. And then the final sentence is, you have been duly warned. And then you would sign this letter, you would hand it to them, and then moving forward, this is, you know, in the next steps for those who are not responding to the notices of liability in a favorable way and respecting individual rights, which we're having great success on many scales. For those, the unions and the corporate federal businesses, to them we are receiving this letter, and to them is the one where we are taking the next step and laying criminal charges. So that is the direction we're taking, and we're going to ramp up making sure that we engage all elected officials at all levels of government and make sure that they understand clearly their liability.
Can you maybe give us a bit of background? What does Action for Canada stand for? Who is it? Who's behind it?
Well, that would be myself. I started this just 6.5 years ago. I had no idea that we would be moving, that I would be moving towards an organization of this size or the impact that it would one day have. I had never been active prior to this. I was, you know, active within my community, helping a neighbor who was in need, doing the reading program with the kids at school, going to church on Sunday, and just living my life and raising my family. And once Justin Trudeau was coming into office, his platform was frightening. And so I started to get involved, and really the first thing that I had written a letter of concern about was the legalization of recreational marijuana. And the reason specifically was because they were going to be putting it in the hands of 12-year-olds. And I had, my kids were just coming through high school at that point, and my son had a couple of friends who were very reliant at that point on marijuana. And to this day, one of the friends who never really achieved his full potential, because it affects kids in certain different ways, every individual, however they're susceptible, he actually had said to my son recently, he goes, "Man, I wish I never touched weed," because he himself admitted that he never fully reached his full potential. And the reason Trudeau was doing it at the time was that very shortly after that, he was trying to lower the age of voting. So he was buying votes. Anyway, from there, it went to Bill C-16, allowing biological men into women and children's private spaces, Motion M-103, radical political Islam, making room for them to infiltrate further into the country, then into the gun ban. So I was doing all these letter-writing campaigns, and my list of supporters grew. And then eventually, you know, people were saying, "Tanya, more people need to know about what you're doing." And it was to give the silent majority a voice, because a lot of conservative elected officials say, we never hear from conservatives. So the left is coming in, and every demand that they want, they're very loud about it. And you know what? You give me your demand and it will become, your wish will become true. And so Trudeau came in with a very specific agenda. It was to drive Canada away from a democracy and a free nation and into communism. So as soon as COVID hit, as soon as I saw that first news report coming out of China, I looked at my mom and I said, "There is no pandemic. This is about catapulting communism into Canada." And because I was already so well set up, I immediately started writing a report called Government Corruption, Including with a Foreign Syndicate. And I had launched that in April of 2020. We sent a call to action campaign and delivered it to every single premier in Canada. And they got it multiple, multiple times. That was in May of 2020. Not one of them responded. And that told me that right away, every single one of them were on board with the corruption. And in July of 2020, I sat down with the top RCMP in BC. I laid it all out for them. I came in with reports. We had a 45-minute meeting. I said, "I believe that the Prime Minister is making backroom deals with the premiers." And he was like, "Oh, you know, we meet with the health officer every week, you know, and I said, "This is murder." I said, "They're not providing, you know, known treatments for people. Wouldn't you want your loved one to be able to have the option, if they were dying, to have a treatment that could save their lives?" And commissioner, he was assistant commissioner at the time. He's been promoted to deputy commissioner, but his father had also just passed away. So he was in and out of the Surrey Memorial Hospital, and he admitted they were empty. The hospital was empty. And so then, of course, in the fall of last year, the Belarus president had come out and said that the IMF and the World Bank had tried to bribe him with nearly $1 billion U.S. to implement the emergency measures. So I sent that right away to the commissioner. I continued to engage them in tons of email correspondence, and then his right-hand man, Superintendent Blackadar, became my point person. I have provided them all of the dangers and the effects of the injections. I've pleaded with them. I've wept for them to do something in April, May, as they were going after and targeting our children. I sat down with them again in August. On the 30th, and I provided them a 25-page affidavit that I'd created to bring awareness to Bonnie Henry, to request and beg for an investigation to commence. And, of course, we filed the 391-page statement of claim in the legal action against the BC and federal government. So these are all the things that brought Tanya from 6.5 years ago worrying about a few bad legislation that I knew was breaking down, you know, our democracy and our freedoms and our freedom of speech, into a full-on blown attack that the government has commenced a war against the people 22 months ago, and they are mostly unaware of it, but they're waking up.
How can people get involved with Action for Canada?
Well, I would love it if they would come to our website, Action, and it's number 4, actionforcanada.com, and under Join, please join Action for Canada, but also join one of the chapters. We have 110 nationwide, and we plan on being in all 338 ridings, as well as on top of that, every town and community, because we are intending to overturn every school board trustee that is on with the agenda, from the UN agenda down, and take back every city, get rid of every mayor and city councillor who are in on the agenda, and then take back our provincial and federal legislatures. So first, I would say, please join for Action for Canada. Then go to our A4C chapter page, and we have listed all of the chapters, and there's an email address that you can email them directly and get in touch with them. And then within each of these chapters, we have started a business campaign a year ago. We have a parent campaign and parent meetings, business meetings throughout the week for pastor teams and reaching out to the church community. And then under Join as well, you will see Workers Unite. And Workers Unite is another campaign that we commenced a few weeks ago. Because I was dealing with so many people coming into our business groups, and so many people are out of work right now and being forced into unpaid leave, that I felt it was critical that we get all of these people together so that I could walk through all of the information, how to serve a notice of liability to your employer, to your union, how to use the additional letter I've created, and then as well to use the notice of liability against COVID testing. And so Action for Canada is very broad in the audience that we are assisting. And so we've got something for everyone. If you're a concerned parent, when you join, join the parent team. We meet every Tuesday at 3:30 PST. The business team comes after at 4:30. We have business material resources that are in this heated environment of health officials trying to close down businesses. We have businesses open because they are using Action for Canada's material, and they are in a sense defying the orders because they are standing in their guaranteed right to be open and still respect the rights of their customers by not requesting their personal medical information.
What's the latest on the Rocco Galliati lawsuit?
Well, as you know, we have filed August 16th of this year, and we have had some very good success come from that. One is that the Minister of Education, Jennifer Whiteside, who is named in the statement of claim, she refused to be the one to mandate that all teachers get vaccinated. Instead, she decided to put the liability threat onto the school board trustees, and that it was at that time that we realized that she didn't, I guess she doesn't want further liability. I guess maybe she's starting to weigh the risk of continuing on in violating and infringing upon the rights of Canadians that's guaranteed under our charter. So Jennifer Whiteside did not commence the action, and instead the school board trustees were doing it. And like I said, we've had 22 out of 22 school boards that have voted and opposed it. Now, they tried to pull a tricky move on December 10th. A superintendent in the Okanagan had sent out a letter to all school staff in district, I think it's 23, demanding that they complete a vaccination data collection notice. And I guess the government had put a pause because we were having so many wins. They didn't want to go to our page every day and keep seeing voted no. And this was a sinking ship for them. So they tried to come at it from another direction. And when I found out about this, I immediately wrote another letter to the school board superintendent saying, you are opening yourself and the trustees up to liability because it doesn't matter what direction you come at this, you are still in violation of the criminal code and human rights and the individual rights of people based on the Constitution and the Charter. So we're waiting to hear back from that. But so that's been a very positive effect because of filing the statement of claim. The other one is BC Ferries, who have been absolutely the masked Nazis in the last year. I mean, to the point their staff was cruel to the passengers that came on who had legitimate exemptions. I don't believe in exemptions. We don't need to be exempt from anything that's already our right. But even within that parameter, where the order said that they had to respect people's rights, that if they couldn't, they couldn't discriminate against them if they said that they couldn't wear a mask. But they discriminated regardless. Once we filed, all of a sudden I was having reports from people traveling the ferry and saying we had no problem. We said we were exempt, or we said we couldn't wear a mask, and their staff were very kind and polite to us, the way it should be, right? I mean, let people make their own choice. And so we understand, I was notified right away by employees that they were going after the employees and saying they had to be mandated to vaccinate or be put on unpaid leave, but they had made a public notice stating that they would not be asking for vax passes from passengers, which is, again, it's the way it should be. And just for your listeners, I want you to know that anybody that's been put on unpaid leave, this is unlawful. The only person who can decide to go on unpaid leave is you. It is an option for an employee to say, I need to go on unpaid leave. Might be a personal crisis, might be whatever their reason is. It has never been acceptable, nor is it legitimate that an employer can put an employee on unpaid leave. It's just craziness. Anyway, those are some of the things that are already transpiring through the legal action. There's a few more things that I could add, but right now it's the process of, getting into the courts. The reason we chose a constitutional challenge, we knew that this was for the long haul, not going to necessarily achieve what we want in the short term. And that's why we are taking all of the other actions, created all of the other notices of liability so that people could rightfully walk in non-compliance, but have the resources to support them and empower them.
We'll have more with Tanya Gaw right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Tanya Gott. Tanya, bullets versus needles. If you shoot and maim or kill someone with a bullet, what happens? And what happens if you maim or kill someone with an experimental injection?
Well, Jim, you know, that's a very good question, and it's a very simple answer. There is no difference. And if there's a sense of criminal code says murder is murder, then I think that we need to, refer to the criminal code when this is transpiring. When I was mentioning to you earlier that individuals are pressing criminal charges against their employers, one of them is for assault and battery. We have reports from employees, a firefighter, for instance, who just felt completely coerced into taking the vaccination. He had a young family. His lieutenant, who is totally awake and aware, was saying, do not take the injection. This individual already had neurological damage from a past incident, totally unrelated to COVID, but he was fully employed as a firefighter and doing very well. And he felt coerced into doing this, was worried about supporting his family, and so one morning he decided to go and take the injection. On his way home, he crashed his truck because of a seizure, because of neurological damage. That was back in August. A week ago Thursday, health organization overseeing his department had done a thorough investigation, and they had determined in the end that it had nothing to do with the vaccination. And this is how they're trying to cover it up. I have another gal who's in Saskatchewan that was a teacher, single mom, felt coerced into taking it. She right away immediately had myocarditis. And so she is going to be applying as well for assault and battery. This is an offense. It's a criminal offense. When in the history has any government had to force a vaccination on society? When did choice become an issue? And so this is absolutely genocide. It's murder. And the premiers and the health officers who are behind this are going to be held to account. They are going to be held liable. And now it's up to educating employers to fully let them understand what they're participating in. They are committing indictable criminal offenses at the beckoning of the government. And nobody can be compelled to break the law. And David Lindsay, he said it best when he said, if condition of employment was that you had to come to work and three times a week they would slap you in the face, would that be okay? Or if you had to come to work and a condition of employment was that you'd be sexually assaulted, would that be acceptable? Or would you wait for your union to file a grievance? No, I think you would immediately go and file for an investigation and press criminal charges because it's assault. This is no different. And Canadians need to really, wake up and understand that there is a rule of law and a constitution and human rights for a reason. And to really compel them, I would suggest that they go to this drop the mic letter that I refer to on the Action for Canada Notice of Liability page. In red, it says new twice. And it's those two documents. Choose which one you're going to use. And would you mind, Jim, if I just go over this letter briefly?
No, go ahead.
All right. The reason it's I think, important is because you've brought up a very critical point, is that would this be considered a criminal act when they're trying to force an injection that we know is causing harm? And normally, throughout the history of testing medications or vaccines, if there were 50 deaths, they would immediately, the pharmaceutical companies have always pulled it immediately from the market, and there would be a warning that you would see on TV saying, it would just bring you aware that if you had had this vaccination or this medication, please contact XYZ law firm and let them know of your injuries, and that, that there would be compensation for that. But that was the normal standard. 50 deaths. They pull it from the market. We have tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of reported deaths directly related to this experimental injection. So the form that I've created, it says threat to use a COVID injection, as I mentioned, as a condition of XYZ, education, employment, etc. There are no provisions in any orders of any health minister, doctor, or provincial legislation that can, nor pretend that any measures can, override charter or other pre-charter constitutional rights. All statutes, orders, bylaws, and acts must be consistent with the Constitution, or they are of no force and effect. And Section 52.1 says clearly, Section 52.1 of the Constitution Act 1982, the Constitution of Canada is the supreme law of Canada, and any law that is inconsistent with the provisions of the Constitution is, to the extent of the inconsistency, of no force or effect. According to the Public Health Agency of Canada, Canadian National Report on Immunization, 1996, vaccines are not mandatory in Canada, and they cannot be made mandatory because of the Canadian Constitution. So on this page, when I wrote this letter, I'm trying to build and solidify Canadians are protected under the Constitution 100%. There is no wiggle room here for any order to come in and interfere with it, because it says clearly in Section 52.1 that it's the supreme law of Canada, and any law that is inconsistent with it is of no force or effect. And then it's very clear on the National Report on Immunizations that they can't have vaccines as mandatory because we're protected under the Constitution. And then if the federal government had invoked the Federal Emergency Act, which it has not, because Trudeau would have had to demonstrably prove that we were in a pandemic, and he couldn't, and then he would have needed public input and debate in the legislature, which he couldn't do because he would have lost control. So he did these backroom deals with the provinces to get the premiers to do it. And the premiers never demonstrably proved that there was a emergency. And understand, when it was written, emergency qualified as a natural disaster. Hurricane, storm. Virus isn't a natural disaster. It was never included. So even if they were to demonstrably prove that there was a pandemic, it was never included in what constitutes an emergency. So nobody has demonstrably proved we're in pandemic because they can't, because it's a fake pandemic. They just use whatever virus. I'm not saying there isn't a virus, but it's very treatable. So in the Emergency Act, it says, and whereas the governor and council, in taking such special temporary measures, it's been 2 years, temporary measures would be subject to the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms and the Canadian Bill of Rights, and must have regard to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, particularly with respect to those fundamental rights that are not to be limited or abridged, even in a national emergency. And so every time I say, boom, drop the mic, that is a huge statement. There is no way they can interfere. So now I back it up a little further and I say education or access to essential or non-essential services is 100% guaranteed and protected under Section 7 of the Canadian Charter of Rights, where it says everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of the person. Security of the person means you get to work and provide for your family. Security of the person means you get to choose what goes into your body. And a lethal injection that's still an experiment and in the trial phases does not go in your body. You have that right to choose. And the Charter of Rights and Freedoms is embedded in the Constitution. We've met with Honorable Brian Peckford, who is the last surviving architect of the Charter of Rights. We've spoken with him personally, and he said very clearly the Charter of Rights was included in the Constitution so that the government, nobody could easily amend it. And in order to amend it, you would need 7 out of 10 premiers to agree, which wouldn't be hard to do in this day and age. Thank God that they also need, I believe it's 50% of the population. And so we're pretty secure in knowing that the Charter of Rights sticks right now. There's no amendments, nothing's changed. So I've named Section 52 of the Constitution that says your rights are protected right now. I've said vaccines aren't mandatory. I said that even if there was a federal emergency, that you are protected. Your rights cannot be limited or abridged. Then we refer to Section 7 to say that you have life, liberty, and security of the person. Then the next point in the letter is consent to medical treatment and testing, where it says you get to choose what goes into your body and you get informed consent, which includes the right to refuse such treatment. We link to an article that has 3 Supreme Court rulings saying that this stands. Then we go into the Genetic Non-Discrimination Act, Bill S-201, that states very clearly that it is an offense to force anyone to take a DNA or RNA test or deny anybody service or employment or an education because of it. It's an indictable offense, 3 to 5 years and a million dollar fine. Now, the point of this is some people will say, well, what about rapid testing? If they're sticking anything in your body, that is an offense under the criminal code. They do not have a right to force you to take any kind of a test. And then that leads to where I said earlier about this being extortion and committing tort and privacy violations. Anyways, I hope that people will go and print this off, print a dozen of them so that you have them prepared to hand out and help educate people that there is nothing that anybody can do at this time. There is no lawful order that has been in place, even if there was, that could interfere with any of your rights. Take the mask off. There is no law in Canada that says that you have to wear a mask because they cannot legislate against people breathing freely. There is no order that can supersede your guaranteed rights.
Where is law enforcement on this file?
Well, missing in action. Okay, so in my meetings with the RCMP, they are also named as defendants. And back in conversations I had with them back in the spring, they say, oh, you know, once you get your legal action filed, then it will be go before the courts. And if the court just determines, based on your evidence, that there's anything sinister going on, then they will call on the RCMP to commence an investigation. And so this has been very discouraging for me because I have given them enough evidence that they should have commenced an investigation. And when I filed that 25-page affidavit, it was filled with information. I even included 7 death certificates that a whistleblower nurse had given me, providing evidence that COVID deaths were related completely to having multiple other illnesses. So, for example, comorbidities, I should say. So, for example, an 87-year-old male died. He had stage 4 cancer, and they marked it as a COVID death. Then there was another woman who had had the jab, and they had come in, and down in the notes down below, they were saying that she tested positive for COVID, and that in the notes at the bottom, that her death was deemed a COVID death, but that it was unusual that she had all the flu-like symptoms, but then started to vomit blood. And then it said that she'd had the COVID injection 2 weeks prior. There's so many things that are sinister here. So the officer in charge, Superintendent Blackadar, I'm sorry about that, said that in B.C., apparently in B.C. and New Brunswick, there is a higher threshold for being able to lay criminal charges or to commence an investigation. And I'm like, how high is that threshold? We have evidence. I could bring you, funeral home directors who are seeing babies come in. Unbelievable in comparison to past years, the increase in infants coming in who have died, and children and elderly people, you know, due to the vaccination. I have nurses and doctors who are lined up who could come in and give you their firsthand testimony of coercion and being threatened of losing their license. And so then it's gone completely dead silent since my last conversation with them.
What about these quarantine hotels where people are forced to stay in plastic-lined rooms with food that they're allergic to if they even get food on time? Isn't this forcible confinement because you don't have a right to appeal to a judge? There's no habeas corpus.
Absolutely. If I were those people, I would be pressing criminal charges against everyone involved. It's absolutely an offense. And as I have said here in the Drop the Mic letter, it absolutely says that none of your rights are to be limited or abridged, even in a national emergency. And on our NOL page, we also have a mobility rights notice that you can print off. And it says that we have the right to travel, to enter and exit Canada. And there are no borders within Canada. There are boundaries from one province to another. You don't have to show your passport. You don't have to show your private information. And so, again, at the bottom of the notice of liability page, we have a printable PDF that you can have on your person in order to provide if the RCMP or anybody tries to impede your mobility. And it's too bad that more people aren't well-versed on what their rights are. Because for those who have been at the airports and said, absolutely not, I know my rights under the charter. I know that under Section 6, every citizen has a right to enter, remain in, and leave Canada. And every citizen of Canada and every person who has the status of a permanent resident of Canada has the right to move and to take up residence in every other province and to pursue the gaining of a livelihood in any province. So it's just so absurd that if people had this printed off and on their person, the ones that have been having success. They may still get a fine. Some I think are absurd, like $3,500 or $5,700 when they're coming back, you know, from having traveled. But the people that are providing their charter rights, they may just get a fine and then they walk away. And then, you know, the health authorities are on them saying, oh, you got to test. Well, no, I don't. I don't have to test. And then they could quote again what it says in the notice of liability regarding testing. And the best thing is, get the individual's name, whoever it is who's harassing you, and then serve them a notice of liability immediately. And this is what happened with the business owner I was telling you about earlier. He owns a gym. And on September 13th, as soon as Bonnie Henry had put it in place to this back pass where businesses had to check people's private information, medical information, our gym owner, he ended up, the health officer within a couple of hours called him and said, oh, you know, we've had a report that you're not checking for back passes. Well, probably not. I doubt that any other patron had reported to the health authority that they weren't checking back passes. What probably happened was that they knew that this was a business that knows their rights and had been maintaining, respecting the rights of their customers. prior to this regarding the masking, and they probably wanted to target him and try to shut him down. But what he did was, we have a very special notice of liability for business owners that any federal employee that tries to interfere with their business, they get their name right away, and then they sign it and they give them a copy of stating that they're going to hold them personally liable for any loss of business that they, any loss of income that they or their employees experience because of their unlawful orders. So when this environmental health officer was trying to intimidate, because that's what they were hired for, right? They were all hired to intimidate and bully businesses into compliance. So instead, the business owner sent this individual a notice of liability. And she was really smug. She came back and said, oh, you know, well, first we're going to come in and inspect. You know, never mind that we were going to meet in the parking lot at 1:30 like she'd already agreed on. I'm going to come and inspect. I'm going to talk to you. You know, I'm going to check it out and make sure that you're compliant. So he and then she says, oh, by the way, that notice of liability, it means nothing because under the Provincial Health Act, I'm immune from liability. So he dug into the Health Act like we had done in the School Act because they were trying to say school board superintendents and trustees were not liable under the School Act Section 92 or 94 or 1, where it did say that they were immune from liability. But what they neglected to tell the employees was that under section, the same section 2 and 4, that if they were dishonest, committing willful misconduct or committing tort, then absolutely they were going to be held liable. And that's the campaign we did to the trustees to say, hey, they're not looking out for their best, your best interest. In fact, they're being dishonest with you. You will be held liable. So he looked it up under the Health Act in the province of BC, and he found out where she was acting in bad faith. And so he sent it back, and in bullet point, he said, oh yes, you are acting in bad faith and you can be held liable. And in bullet point, he provided all the areas where he was infringing on and violating his rights. And he says, I am totally prepared to file a human rights complaint against you personally and hold you personally civilly and criminally liable for your interference in my business. And then she backed off. And a little while later, weeks later, she tried to, you know, say, oh, now multiple people were, you know, complaining about his business. So he, in response, asked, he says, you know what, I'm doing a freedom of information. And he says, you are intentionally hurting my business and promoting hate within my community because it's turning people against one another by saying here's an anti-vax business or whatever black brush they wanted to paint, right, on him. So this has been the strategy, is that you got to call them out. You got to be prepared to get educated on the materials that Action for Canada has. You got to get into our Zoom meetings. A lot of them are posted on the Workers Unite group. Go under Join, drop down to Workers Unite, get in there, look at the videos we've posted there. Go on to our Empower Hour. It's also under Join Empower Hour. Look up anything that I've done with David Lindsay. You will learn about how to implement this in your own lives. And I do a whole ton of Q&A with people and address their individual circumstances. So that's pretty much what we've been doing. And we're having great success as far as the criminal side of this.
Gathering of evidence is extremely important. Can you explain?
Yes, so that falls right in line with these next steps with the notice of liability. As I mentioned, we've had businesses, you know, where the employees have served the business and they've completely backed off. We have masks coming off our kids. But again, like I said, the federal businesses and the unions are digging their heels in. I'm sure they're being paid a pretty penny for this. And so what you want to make sure that you're doing, whether as an employee, maybe it's something that's happening to your child at school and you're communicating with the teacher, the principal, the school superintendent, keep all of this communication because it's going to be your evidence. If you decide to take action, whether it's going to be a civil lawsuit or following along our first steps, we're moving toward criminal action because a civil suit can take much longer and we want an immediate action against the individuals and we want to shut this down. And so that's the reason why we're going in the criminal aspect. So you still need to have good evidence to submit to the Crown along with your complaint. And so, for instance, if an employer has put you on unpaid leave and you had communication with them, you record, always record your communication. If it's in person, record them in person. If it's over the phone, record it. Then have that information transcribed, because that's the best way to submit it to the courts. And then if you have been put on unpaid leave and you're like, I didn't know any of what Tanya is telling me here, then go back. It's not too late to serve your employer and the union and whomever else, the HR person, the business owner, a notice of liability and say, look, I had no idea that you absolutely have no authority to put me on unpaid leave. This is unlawful. I'm the only one that can choose to be put on unpaid leave. You need to inform your union of this. They are in violation. They are in breach of their collective agreement with you because they aren't supporting you, and they need to be held to account as well. And it's having a great effect. So keep track and keep a file of all of this information. Engage your employer. Serve them the notice of liability. If you have to send it by registered mail, make sure it's by registered mail so that you can track it. And when it's delivered, make sure that you print that off and save it. If you're serving it in person, make sure that you're recording that transaction to make sure that there's proof that you served them and they can't say otherwise. It's just phenomenal. And yes, this is the evidence that as we move forward, the more evidence that you have of them infringing on your right to be employed, then the better your situation will be. And as well, if you are somebody that is still under threat of being unemployed or being put on unpaid leave, if they put you on unpaid leave, you show up for your next scheduled time to work. Don't let them, because that is you saying, I do not agree with the decision that you've made. I am employed. I've done nothing that gave you a right to terminate me or put me on unpaid leave. What you're doing is unlawful. And I'm going to hold you accountable, and I'm going to hold you personally liable, because what you're doing is committing a criminal offense.
What's the difference between civil and criminal litigation?
Well, that's always a good question. Civil law, it deals with like disputes between like private parties, or in this instance, like between an employee and an employer who is wrongfully dismissed or wrongfully put on unpaid leave. And so the most common remedy is awarded in civil cases is like damages or money. And with a criminal case, sometimes the threshold, as the superintendent said, can be higher to meet, because you're innocent until proven guilty. And that's why the evidence base comes in very important. To prove extortion and intimidation, I don't think is difficult to prove right now. When they're threatening you with a lethal injection, a very harmful injection, it's like playing Russian roulette right now. You don't know if you're getting the placebo or the real deal. They're toying and playing with your life. This is incredible mental anguish that's going on. So I don't think, we won't know because the first cases haven't been heard yet, but we're moving towards that. But I think that using extortion and coercion and intimidation in order for you to do this is definitely easy to prove. Just keep your paperwork. And so that would be my simplest way to say the difference between a civil suit and a criminal case. And as well, a criminal case doesn't cost you money. But if there's a civil suit and you lose, then you'll probably be on the line for a portion, if not all, of what they would be considered the defendant, you would be considered the plaintiff, so you would may have to pay a portion or all of the defendant's costs, court costs, if you lose. And that's, again, why having all of your information very well organized and your evidence is essential. The other thing that for people that I hope will recover the income that they've lost is we're moving towards the criminal charges first, with the idea that if successful, you can move towards a civil claim. And I think I'd have to look it up again, but I think that you can wait up to a year to file a civil claim. And the criminal charges should go through a lot quicker than that.
Is it important that people are held personally liable for their actions?
It is critical that they are held personally liable for their actions. And I remember, for example, the first reaction we had, I had, like, mentioned earlier that we commenced the notice of liability campaign on behalf of minors back in May. And at that point, we weren't as well organized with all the chapters, but I still had a very large email list where parents throughout the nation got on board and were immediately delivering and serving the notice of liability to their teachers, child's teacher, principals, school superintendents. I was talking with Rocco back in June, and about we were going through the final drafts of the statement of claim, and he says, "Did you hear about what's happening in Ontario?" And I says, "No, you know, what's going on?" He says, "Well, the union is telling the teachers not to talk about vaccines in class." And so that to me was a huge win going into the summer. And the other side of it was, locally here in BC, another parent reported to me saying, they sent me an email. It was a teacher had received it and, you know, was just came back saying, "Oh, this is very, feels very threatening. And I don't appreciate you, you know, sending me, this notice." And so the parent went back and said, "Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I'll send you a nicer version of it." And I went, "Stop the bus." I said, "We have nothing to apologize for. We're glad that they feel a sense of personal liability. That's the whole purpose of it. So that they get educated on the abuse that they are administering to and a party to with our children." And it was appalling that after a year, over a year, of the abuse that's going on with our kids in the school system, extreme psychological abuse, that they would be worried only when it came down to personal liability. It's disgusting. So I said, "We have no apologies to make. This is an informative notice to let people know that they are on notice because they're committing indictable and unlawful offenses. And when we take a look at what our kids are experiencing, if there was a bottle of poison water going around the class, say they had 30 bottles of water, some kids were going to get the poison bottle of water and other kids were going to get the placebo bottle of water. Would you sit back and would you just let this happen?" And I would imagine the answer is no. And when you know as well that there's been over a 30% increase in hospitalizations of mental health issues for minors, do you think this is okay and we have anything to apologize for? So we're in a war, and we need to shift in the hearts and minds of individuals that personal liability and shifting their comfort zone from fearing the government possibly, you know, that they may have to consider losing their job if they don't go along with mandating masks for the children and all these tyrannical orders that are harming them and having a moral and ethical compass to go by? Or is it that they're afraid of public opinion? And to me, the fear of public opinion has been the greatest driving force. "Well, and that, and I just don't want a confrontation with, I go to the store, it's easier just to wear a mask." Well, how after 2 years is that feeling now? Do you like tyranny? Because that's what you've contributed to for the last 22 months. And so what the notice of liability is doing, and now going further with criminal charges, is it is shifting their mental state to wake up, start thinking critically about what you're doing, stop being so passive, and understand that our whole existence of freedom in this country and the future for your children comes down to this very moment of noncompliance and being held personally liable. And part of the saddest thing to me, it's the greatest thing the federal government did by saying that federal workers had to vaccinate or lose their job. And I'll tell you why. Because for 20 months, those federal workers may not have liked what was going on, but they had the comfort and security of a job and a paycheck. While hundreds of thousands of businesses have gone out of business while they were silent, while our kids are being abused for a year and a half in school, and while our elderly people were cruelly isolated and dying alone, begging for euthanasia. How convenient that the government just passed that a year or so ago, right? So I have full compassion to the federal workers, and I am fighting tooth and nail for them. but I want them to understand we need you to rise up in an incredibly powerful way and get on with the program of helping us put a stop to what the government is doing. So we're grateful. We're sad that you're unemployed, that it took this to get you to wake up. But we are so grateful that you have joined us and the campaign, the true campaign, to bring freedom back to this country.
Laws versus mandates. What really matters?
The mandates, as I've said throughout, and my drop the mic letter confirms, the mandates are completely useless. They are of no force and effect. We have laws in this country that are paramount, that are critical, that all of us understand that the criminal code is going to be our saving grace if we can all become educated on the fact and how to use it. And so when you say laws or mandates, nothing supersedes our laws, and the Constitution is the supreme law of Canada.
Are whistleblowers speaking up?
Oh, my goodness, they're coming out left, right, and center now. We take a look at our doctors, you know, who, like I said, with the RCMP, I had them lined up for doctors to come in and give testimony, but they're, for whatever reason, they're being shut down. The colleges of physicians are just a brutal arm of the WHO. They have no sovereignty or loyalty to Canada, and that is the reason why these brave doctors, like Dr. Hoff in BC, Hutchinson, and Dr. Mel, Dr. Nagasi, they're all being threatened with their license if they don't comply and keep their mouths closed about the devastation and the harm that they are seeing happening in the hospitals. One, due to COVID, so-called COVID victims not getting proper protocol treatments, including ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and vitamin D being promoted. But now, you know, these doctors are being silenced from being able to come forward and speak about the incredible harms and the death rate that is being caused by the vaccinations. And we have all these amazing, you could call them whistleblowers. They're just coming out and telling the truth. They're proclaiming the truth. And I have this group of doctors, dentists, etc., that a group that I've been in contact with as well. And there's many of the doctors, I think eight of them in a small town, who have said ethically and morally, we are stepping away because we cannot comply with these unlawful orders when we see the devastation that this injection is causing. So it's now, what do we do with these whistleblowers, but that more and more of us press back? You know, I'll tell you one quick thing as well. In New Brunswick, many of you may have heard that on December 4th, the New Brunswick government, as part of an order, had put it in place that grocery stores that provide food for people could ask for vax passes and deny people food. Well, have we just walked back into Nazi Germany, right? And so our chapter leader, Pastor Ken Gilliard, and his wife, they've been with us since February as chapter leaders. They have been amazing. Thousands and thousands of people they coordinate throughout New Brunswick, but also in the Maritimes. So now in the Maritimes, we have new chapter leaders coming in, and Ken and Bonnie have been overseeing all of this. So when this order came into place, they immediately organized a rally outside the legislature, and they called it a pots and pans rally. And because of it, thousands of people showed up, and the MLAs at the end of the day had to be escorted through this very noisy, very rightfully upset crowd to their vehicles. And shortly after that, they ended up closing down the legislature and decided to have their meetings on Zoom. So that's powerful. And this is the people rising up together. This, I call it, the villagers coming out with their pitchforks and shovels saying, we will not allow you to destroy our democracy. You have an oath that you have taken to uphold the Constitution and look out for the citizens, your constituents. So then it went from that to this large market that was going to take place that is partly run and owned by the city. Ken referred to it as a tier two tier government, and they as well were blocking anybody. They had to show vax passes in order to come into this huge market. So the vendors were very upset because they have loyal customers that they wanted to serve, and they felt that they had no power as well because of what the government was doing. So again, Ken had organized a very peaceful rally where thousands of hundreds or thousands of people were going to show up and make a long lineup to come into the market. If they were denied access, that person was going to serve a notice of liability and record that individual defying their rights and being in violation of the law and the Constitution, and then go and join the rest of the rally. Well, as a result of all of this, plus, you know, other protesters or whatever, I'm sure people were writing to the Premier and the MLAs, letting them know that this was just a horrible decision that they'd made and to retract it. But as a result, the day before the rally took place, on December 17th, all of a sudden the government put an order out saying that they had removed this section of the order that gave authority, which it still didn't. I mean, no grocery store had authority to do that, but it removed it. And so this is the kind of power that we're talking about in mobilizing Canadians in unison across Canada and making sure that they have the resources that are going to put them in a position where they are completely empowered and they know their rights. And as long as they can help educate others and stand guard, then, you know, we're going to be, by province, we're tearing this down.
Should the media be held accountable, and what part have they played in this government fraud?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, the media is the propaganda arm of the government, as they were through the era of Hitler. And without the media, none of this would have been able to take place. Because if we had all turned our TV off, and if you were out walking around, and you were still visiting your grandmother in the old folks' home, you would have seen that there was no increased death toll. You would have seen that people were shopping normally and buying their groceries. There was lots of toilet paper on the shelves. There was no panic. There's been no problem. The rate of death, according to Health Canada, has been in line, if not a little lower, than the yearly influenza. I understand, I believe it's around 29,000 deaths in a country with nearly 38 million people, and that's in 2 years, two seasons. Who continues to count death toll over two seasons? That's how desperate they are to include death, COVID death, in this fake pandemic. It's abhorrent what they have been doing. And if you consider 15,000 deaths, and that's putting it at a broad scope, 15,000 deaths per year, in a country with 38 million people, there is no pandemic, my friends. And so the media have to be held to account. And so what we've done is last week we just launched the final notice of liability, which is the media notice of liability. And we are asking every citizen across the country that whatever local rag, if it's a small town you're in, and they end up posting a report on anything pro-COVID, where they are undermining maybe a notice of liability, you know, that's been served on a local store and diminishing the effect of that, or coming out and saying that anybody, these anti-maskers or anti-vaccine, if there's an article with a title, that's a biased report. People that are opposing this are in their right mind, and creating a two-tiered system and campaigning people against one another is all motivated by the media. So in this small town, in the big cities, you get people together and you at the top of it, it's the most unique notice of liability we have, because what you do is you would put the individual's name, whether it's the editor, reporter, broadcaster, whomever it is, radio, whoever it is, and you don't put them in their capacity of their position, you just put down their name as a fellow citizen. Then, because there's a journalistic standard that they must maintain and they must be unbiased, you can check off, you have a selection of multiple boxes that you can check off to put where you feel that they are in violation. And then you serve that notice of liability to them, and then you can even be someone who may decide to press criminal charges against them.
Are we witnessing mass psychosis?
100% we are. Yeah. The great delusion I like to call it. I was out today, unfortunately. I don't get to go out a lot because, you know, I'm so busy working here at home. And in an instance, I was trying to have a special time with my mom in a nursery that we visit every Christmas because they have the most beautiful setup of knickknacks and Christmassy things. And right away we come in and there's all these young kids working at the front end and they tell us, oh, you got to wear a mask. It says mandatory before you come in. And I says, no, actually, we can't wear a mask, but thanks very much. And they try to stop us and say, no, you have to wear a mask. I says, nope, actually, we don't. I says, they say it's the law. And I says, no, you need to educate yourself. There is no law in Canada saying I have to wear a mask. And they say, well, it's the order and we're a private business. Well, no, you're not a private business. You have a business license and you're open to the public. And I said, so we have a right to shop and you don't have a right to discriminate against us. And if you continue, I have a right to file a human rights complaint, which could in effect cost up to $75,000. And if my mom decides to do one as well, that could be $150,000 depending on what the court would award. And so my mom and I continued. They were gobsmacked, right? And because everybody else, there was nobody in there. It was just my mom and I. So I said, come on, mom. We carry on and, you know, we're having a delightful time. And the next thing you know, the owner comes up to us and advises us that we need to leave. And I says, no, absolutely not. I said, you need to take a look at the order. It says that those who have, for health reasons, they don't have to wear a mask. I said, secondly, I says, there's no law in Canada saying anybody has to wear one. Well, we're doing this to protect others. I said, no, you're not. No, you're not. But if that's your decision, go ahead. I says, but we can't wear a mask. And so it was just so undelightful. And so then we went to a second store. That was another spot we hit, and the ladies again tried to tell us, and they were much better about it. I said, no, actually, we can't, but you know what, thank you so much. And a while later, she comes back and said, oh, I spoke to the manager, and you need to wear a mask or you need to leave. And I says, no, actually, I don't. And I says, that's discrimination. And I says, and under the order, it says, you need to respect people who can't wear a mask. And I said, I could show it to you right here if you like, Section 5, and because I had it on my phone. And so then she comes back again. And she says, there's children in the store, small children who haven't had their vaccination. And I said, well, thank God for that, right? And so she now doesn't know what to do with me. She leaves again. Mom and I found nothing that we wanted. And so we left. And so, but as we're leaving, she says, oh, the manager, I just got off the phone with the manager. She said she'd be happy if you want to come in before hours or after hours. I says, no, thanks. I says, we're good. We didn't find anything we wanted. We're on our way. And of all things, I go to Winners Home Sense on the way home as well with my mom, and we had no problems, no problems whatsoever there. And I'd already served Winners Home Sense 6 months ago. I advised their head office that they must respect people who cannot wear because they're putting wear masks because they're putting them in physical harm, and this is all about the education. Now, if I had the time, I would go back to both of these locations. I would serve them the business notice of liability, and I would help educate them as business owners that they're actually in violation of individual rights and that people could press criminal charges against them. But I don't have that time. But the beauty is that's what our chapters are doing. That's why we need as many people as possible. So I could call up the Surrey chapter and say, hey, you know what? Go and give these people a visit. And see if you can make some room there to educate them that we're not in a pandemic and that they're in violation and infringing on individual human rights by trying to assert authority they do not have.
Does science or lack of science provide justification to end the COVID pandemic?
I don't think anything has to do with science. This has nothing to do with science. This has to do with communism. This has nothing to do with a pandemic. It has nothing to do with what anybody knows. This was a very, very well-planned agenda to catapult communism and global control throughout the world. And that's why they're all in step. Every time there's an order, like for coming in for Christmas, you know, you can have 10 people in your home, and only if they're all vaccinated. And you know what? Don't sing. You know, it is absolute tyranny. It is absolutely meant to press down and destroy, the inner person, to destroy the soul of another individual. And that way, if they can get them far enough down, then they can control them. And that is why the masks are a barometer for the government to see how effective they are. As long as people continue to wear masks, the government knows that they have control over a majority of the population. That's why you have the long lineups for people getting, you know, one, the vax, and the other for the, I've heard recently about 3-hour lineups to go and get testing. Testing for what? Omicron? What, Omicron is just a cover up for the vaccine injury. Isn't that something? And isn't it something that it affects children under 12? Who's the next targeted audience? But, you know, 5 to 11 year olds. Let's get them vaccine now in this Omicron. Oh, you better be careful. It's going to attack your kids. And oh, by the way, it's myocarditis and blood clots. So no, does science have anything to do with this? I don't think it has anything to do with it.
If someone of power mandates people or corporations to break the law, who has committed a crime?
Well, as I said earlier again, that we all have a duty to uphold the law. You cannot force somebody to rob a bank. And if you did, that person is going to be held liable for it. You can't force somebody to commit a criminal act against someone else. You morally and ethically have to make that decision for yourself. And so, first of all, the individual is going to be held accountable. And then secondly, absolutely, the powers that be are going to be held accountable for their corruption, because they're deceiving the public, they're acting in bad faith, they're committing murder, and a whole long list of other things. So the point of what Action for Canada is doing by going after teachers, school board trustees, superintendents, and whoever else, for instance, committees of sports events who say, oh, for your child to play soccer, you know what, they have to be double vaxxed. Well, we've served notice of liability to these committees, and recently two gentlemen stepped down because they didn't want to be held liable. And so it all comes down to personal accountability. And so when you're asking who's committed the crime, anybody who is perpetuating and supporting what the government is doing is committing unlawful acts. Now, initially, they may not be aware of that. But once they've been served a notice of liability and informed, they have a duty. They have a duty to read the notice of liability and become informed, and then they have a decision to make. And if they decide to continue to uphold the government's unlawful measures and be a conduit for that, then they've opened themselves up to indictable personal liability.
If an employer threatens an employee with unpaid leave or being fired for not getting an experimental medical treatment, is the employer committing a crime?
100% yes. They are using extortion, intimidation. They are in violation of the privacy acts of that person. They have a right to medical privacy. They're committing tort. Many, many levels of criminal activity going on when an employer who is not a medical professional, and even if they were, if the employer is not my medical professional, I don't care if you're a doctor and you're in a clinic and you're saying you all need to get vaccinated. If that nurse does not want a vaccination, he is not her medical professional. And even if he was, if she decided I don't want to get that experimental injection, she has a right under the law in Canada to say no and to be respected for that. So there is no employer, medical or not, that can implement any measure to force anybody to get a vaccination against their will at risk of losing their job.
If someone on social media pushes their followers to get the experimental injections, could they be committing a crime?
I don't know if they'd be committing a crime. This comes down to, the point of it is I understand is they're advertising for it. If there's a, their opinion that, you know, they got the injection and they're fine, well, one, I always say they should thank God they probably got the placebo, or if they had a limited reaction, it was probably because they got a diluted version of it, which we know is out there. But I think that if they were just making a personal opinion on it, then I don't think that they're committing an indictable offense. It's on every person to become informed and to have informed consent before putting anything in their body.
Does it look like China and its social credit system is attempting to take over Canada?
Yeah, China's been a problem for a long time, the infiltration into Canada and messing with our democracy. There was a fellow named David McKinty, and he's a Liberal MP. And in 2019, he was given full access to all of our, security. So CSIS, CBSA, the RCMP, the military, they were to provide him all access of any reports that they had of foreign infiltration. And Mr. McGinty came back, and his report was very frightening. It said that we are under severe attack and severe threat of foreign interference, and that he listed China as one of the greatest concerns. And one of the places that they had infiltrated the greatest was in our universities. And it really makes sense, because there's a lot of Chinese students that have come to Canada for an education. They've had to leave their families back home, and there's been reports of the Chinese agents coming in and threatening them to provide information, anything that they could account for that would maybe be of interest to them. The levels of corruption here, I don't know. I haven't done a deep dive into that. But when Justin Trudeau comes out and says that he has a great admiration for China, when he has a says that he's going to finish what his dad began, which is to create Canada as a communist nation, we're in big trouble. If we think that this isn't serious and that it's not going to affect us very deeply. So the social credit system, Trudeau applauds all things China. I think that anything that China owns in Canada, that they should surrender back to Canada, and they all need to get out. And I have incredible, amazing Chinese friends who are right here on the front lines with me, because they said, we fled communism in order to come to a free country. And maybe you've talked to people that come from Poland, or other countries in Eastern Europe, where they were under great oppression and they've lived through it. They're on the front lines warning us of what's here and that we all need to fight. So does China pose a threat? 100%. And we need a government to get elected who is going to see this and in all ways cut ties with China and with the UN and focus on Canada and getting us back on our feet and recovering from this.
Is Canada the nation in an ongoing fight against Agenda 2030 and the Great Reset?
Oh, yes, 100% on that as well. Way back in December of 2018, just prior to it, the Global Compact on Migration and 17 Sustainable Development Goals was the big topic, and Trudeau was going to sign the Global Compact, and Andrew Scheer was leader of the Conservative Party at the time, and Andrew Scheer did nothing out of his own free will to support Canadians or Conservatives. I very much believe that Andrew Scheer was not a friend of ours. And so I created a petition against the Global Compact being signed, and within 3 days I had 11,000 signatures on it. And wouldn't you know, after 11,000, because every time the petition was signed, an email would go to Justin Trudeau, Jagmeet Singh, Maxime Bernier, and Elizabeth May was the head at that time, but also Andrew Scheer. So I guess after 11,000 emails, Andrew Scheer thought he'd pop his head out of the hole and start to say, oh, yeah, this is wrong. Trudeau shouldn't be signing this. And Trudeau went ahead and signed it in December of 2018. But sustainable development goals were already being signed by Harper. And people don't understand that Harper was not a friend of ours as well. I have quite a few stories, about where he could have appointed judges, he could have appointed senators, and for various reasons, very sinister reasons, he chose not to do that. And so the Global Compact on Migration and 17 Sustainable Development Goals are part of Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. And basically, they break down all of our borders, no borders. They take control of our resources, our education system, our banking system, everything. And for Alberta, this was already impacting them in incredible ways. We were fighting on their behalf because they were destroying the oil industry. It's fine to bring oil from overseas, but don't you dare create oil within Canada, right? It's fine that China is burning all this coal and the pollution because of it is astronomical, but a clean country like Canada better buckle up their belts, tighten everything up. Don't you dare think of this horrible crude oil sourced in Canada. So this 17 Sustainable Development Goals was meant to destroy everything and give global control. So now the oil, they're working with the Saudis or whoever else it is, and making sure that they would have control of that and control at the pump. And in the meantime, you see that in Alberta, the increase in suicide rate over the last years has gone up astronomically. Men that had very secure jobs can no longer provide for their families. They're working three jobs. And the suicide rate, I'd know families that I would visit when I was in Calgary and Edmonton, and they would report, yeah, I've known three people who committed suicide because they lost their jobs in the oil fields. And then now you bring in COVID and you squeeze the noose even more. And now these city councilors are thinking, oh, you anti-vaxxers and you anti-maskers, how dare you show up here, and so angry. No, we're angry because you are destroying the lives and livelihoods of individuals. So, yeah, does it have an effect? Is this Agenda 2030 unfolding and the global reset? 100% lockstep.
Do you have a positive outlook for the future of Canada?
I do. in respect to all of this, I really, really do. Because of the recent wins that we're having, that I said at the onset of this program, when I see that we are pushing back effectively, when I see that the government and the media and the unions are all talking about our notices of liability, and I see that we, like a wave across the nation, are mobilizing Canadians in a very tangible and effective way, and I have great hope for the future. And part of what Action for Canada's mission is, I should have answered this or included this when you had asked me moving forward, is that the reason we want to be in every 338 ridings is we want to make sure that everybody has potential candidates running for all levels of government coming up to the next elections, whether school board trustees, whether mayor and city council, or whether provincial or federal. And it's very positive because many, many of our good people in these meetings, I keep saying to them, I said, what you need to decide now, we've got everything done, notices are done, we're serving everybody, we're trying to come up with ways to get your kids out of school, we're reaching out to business owners and churches saying we've got unemployed teachers, we've got parents desperate to take their kids out of school but have no place to put them, let's open up a church basement and get kids in there. So we are implementing everything, but I said, now they say, what can we do? I says, now you can consider to run for office. You're well educated on the issues. You've learned the law. And now it's time for you to put this in motion. And if it's school board trustee that's coming up, be prepared. Be prepared. We're going to have a boots on the ground team around you. And we're going to support you and make sure that everybody in the community knows who you are.
Is worldwide voter fraud the elephant in the room?
I think it's of a great concern, but I think that if we could get more people to get involved when elections were taking place, and, we need a dozen people in the room being, help me out, when the votes are taking place, the counters. There's a certain term for that that escapes me right now, but when the vote is taking place, you are there as a witness to make sure that nothing untoward or sinister is going on. And I'll tell you, I've volunteered for this position multiple times, and I'm shocked that there's maybe only two of us, while the NDP and the Liberals may have 10 people in the room. It's shocking. We need to step up, and we need to get involved, and we need to be involved in every part of the process of the voting.
What can people listening who love Canada do to get our nation back?
Well, they could take off the mask, and they can say no and not comply to any of the orders. After, if they're just not sure about that, read the notice of liability, read that extra letter that I've been telling you about, because it will give you so much power within the very fiber of your being. And the more you educate yourself, the better that you can, take anybody on in any given moment. And I don't mean that in an aggressive way. I did shop in both of those stores, and I did exit those buildings peacefully. And did I cause a bit of disruption for them? Yes. But hopefully, I said, you're going to be sorry. I said, I'm fighting for your country. And at some point, I pray to God that you're going to realize that. And so they need to get involved with Action for Canada. Please join Action for Canada. Be part of the, I would say, LifeSite News has reported us as the biggest growing movement, freedom movement in Canada. And I would have to agree with them. And it's not out of a sense of pride. It's out of a sense that this is absolutely essential, that we unify as many people as possible. And I know there's many other good organizations out there, but they really don't have the resources that Action for Canada have to make sure that people can protect their rights, and that empowers them in the way that we do and give them the hope that's absolutely essential for people. When they've got hope, when they see good news and they see things happening, they say, okay, well, maybe things aren't hopeless. I'm going to get involved. I'm going to take my mask off. I'm going to serve my teacher. I'm going to make that appointment with the mayor. I see that now that it's not pointless, because I see the areas where we're winning. And so I just really encourage people, get involved with Action for Canada, and be involved in your community, help your neighbor, and we're going to see this through together.
How can people find out more about and possibly get involved with Action for Canada?
Well, again, that would be to go to Join Action for Canada in our main menu under Join, and scoot down a few notches when that pops up, and you can see the A4C chapters. Go to that page and get in touch with your local chapter. The emails are available. They are being overwhelmed, so it might take a little bit before they get back to you, so please be patient, because we're growing so fast. And then as well, join one of our meetings where you can be involved in the strategy and then actually implementing the strategy. So that would be our parent team, our business team, our pastor team, and the Workers Unite. I would love to see that Workers Unite group grow to 100,000 people, because when Quebec decided, medical health workers decided that they were not going to comply with the medical mandate to have the injection back in October, the health official came on, 25,000 of them walked off the job. They said, no way. And the medical health officer said, we're going to get this done. We'll put a pause on it until November, but we're going to get her done. And I thought, you fool. You just blinked. And that, there was a tremendous amount of strength and power that came from those individuals walking off the job and down. And so wouldn't you know, in November, the premier decided that they were going to allow medical professionals to not be forced to vaccinate. Now think about it. If we have 100,000 people nationwide that, you know, at the press of one email, we can say, okay, this is the strategy. This is the day we're doing it. We're going to shut the economy down. We're going to shut the roads down. Whatever the strategy is, we need to do this nationwide. And the only way to do that is to be part of an umbrella group who has all, everything in already implemented and ready to do this. And the other reason I really, of course, promote Action for Canada is not just because I founded it. It's because I so believe in what we're doing. And because other organizations don't have the materials that empower people to walk off their job and show their employers, I 100% have the right to do this. And you're committing offenses. You're violating privacy rights. You're violating the Constitution and Charter, and you're violating the criminal code. And I don't want to take action against you, but I will be compelled to do so if you continue to extort me and harass me. That's a powerful thing for an employee to be able to say to the employer or to the union. And think about how that information falls on the ears of the individuals receiving it. So we don't want to put people in a position where they walk off or they take these steps without something to support them and put them in a good position to have recourse, right? And just final, I want to add, not final, but whatever your next question may be, I just want to make sure that people understand I'm not a lawyer and I'm not a doctor. I'm not providing legal advice and I'm not providing medical advice. What I'm doing is providing resources that tangibly take what's available to any of us to get off of the internet, the Constitution, the Charter of Rights, and the rule of law, and I've put them onto a piece of paper that makes sense and that support you. And so I just want to make sure that any information that I'm giving is based on what's available to every single person on your call.
Tanya, thank you so much for being on the show.
Well, Jim, thank you so much. It's been a delight and just such an honor, and I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to speak with your audience and just let them know about all the good stuff that Action for Canada is doing. What drives me every single day is that the lives that are that are being saved and the jobs that are being saved by implementing the resources that Action for Canada has available. So thank you so much for giving me that opportunity.
My guest has been Tanya Gaw, founder of Action for Canada, online at actionforcanada.com. That's action, the number 4, canada.com. She was speaking to us from Vancouver. If you have any questions for our guests, we'll ask that question for you if you send it to info@howstreet.com, our YouTube channel, Talk Digital Network. Find us on Twitter at Talk Digital Net. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on the Goddard Report and TalkDigitalNetwork.com are an expression of opinion only. The Goddard Report is available online and mobile at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. The Goddard Report is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.